on this auspicious occasion of Chaitanya, a festival for joy and enlightenment. Today's topic that was chosen by the pious young ladies was identity crisis. Years ago, I was alone on the side of a small road in a rainforest of Thailand, about 5 hours driving from Bangkok. The vehicle that was supposed to drive me back changed its mind, and I had to catch a train from Bangkok the next morning. It was a lonely road. There was no traffic. It was the late afternoon. I was standing on the side of the road like this. This is the traditional method of begging people to pick you up and drive you in their car. After about 15 minutes, the first vehicle came. It was a brand new Mercedes limousine. It stopped. There was a chauffeur in the front seat and a very dynamic looking person in the back seat. The back seat is way back. You could practically, just in the space between the front seat and the back seat, you could practically have cricket match. By the way, I'm very happy to see that you have come here, even though there is cricket match. You are truly liberated ladies. So as I was sitting back there, I got to talking to the owner of the car. He began to tell me about his life. He was a television star, if from America. In fact, in the United States of America, his television series, he told me this, and I found out it was true, was the number one television series in all of America for about 5 continuous years. He was a famous star. He told me he was brought up in a very poor neighborhood of New York, and in high school, he studied acting, and his acting teacher told him that you should just forget about acting. You'll never make it. You have no natural talent. So he actually hitchhiked to California, Hollywood, and became the number one television star in America within a few years. He was making about $25,000 a week. How many rupees is that? More than 10 lakhs a week. That was his salary. And he made even more than that a week on doing advertisements and commercials and being a special guest of honor in various functions. He owned a house, a beautiful mansion, near Beverly Hills in a place called Universal City. He owned 4 cars, brand new, beautiful, expensive cars. He told me he had anything he wanted in life was his. Every week, the most beautiful movie actresses and television actresses were on his show, and he was having relations with all of them. He had money, he had the most beautiful ladies. Whenever he would walk down the street, people would run at him, and they all knew him. He was famous. And he told me that he was in the crowd of the most popular people in the world, the great movie stars, television stars, musicians, politicians, industrialists. He was invited to their parties. And he was very, very popular. And then he explained that he looked around and saw that all these, this is what he told me. It's not from Bhagavad Gita, it's from him. He told me that all those people, famous, beautiful, handsome, the greatest athletes of the world, he knew them all, he was friendly with them all. He said all their lives were so empty, so superficial. They were all trying to be someone that they were not. They were all trying to put on a show to the world. And worse of all, they were trying to put on a show to themselves of how beautiful, how handsome, how athletic, how good they sang, how good they acted. He said, they were not only acting on stage, their whole life was a theatrical performance. He said, for some years, it was enthralling, it was intoxicating. There was so much pleasure in it, so much prestige, so much wealth. He could do anything, anytime, anywhere, with anyone. But he came to the conclusion there was nothing inside his heart. He told me, you see these beautiful ladies who are on the television and they have big, shining smiles? He said, inside, there's nothing there. They're lonely. It's all a show. Then this man actually began to cry. And he looked out the window, and there were some simple peasants in the rice paddies who are on their hands and knees with those little straw hats. And they were picking rice, wearing rags. He said, I would rather be with those people than the big, big, famous people of the world that everyone wants to be with. Why? Because these people are real. They're not putting on a show. They have inner substance. And then he looked at me, and he asked me a question. He said, do you think that there's hope for me? And then he asked me another question. He said, how can I become like you? I said, do you know what you're asking? I have no money at all. I'm standing on the side of the road begging for anyone to pick me up. I don't know where I'm going to stay in Bangkok. I don't know anybody there. And you're driving in a Mercedes limousine, and you've already told me that when you get to Bangkok, you're staying in the penthouse of the Hilton Hotel. You want to be like me? He said, but you have, when I see you, I believe that you have some peace in your heart. I don't have that. And no one in my jet set of society has any of that, although they're all pretending to be something that they're not. I said to this very, very famous man, in my opinion, there is great hope in your life because of your sincerity. And he sighed and said, really? Do you really think so? What I observed in this man is that he and all the people he was talking about in his crowd were sleeping in a feathered bed of lies. In this world, we are all trying to find who we are and what is a real meaning to life. In this journey of life, we wander through the world, different relationships, different places, different experiences, trying to find this meaning to life. But unfortunately, most people are living in an environment of superficiality and inner emptiness. When we're born, we're influenced by the people and surroundings. We don't even have yet the power to discriminate, to accept or reject. Small children are like little, their consciousness is like little sponges. They just soak up everything in the environment, and it goes deep into their consciousness to make them believe who they are and what they're worth. And that influences their whole life. When we're little children, babies, we're taught what we should eat, what we shouldn't eat, what is good and what is bad, what has value, what has no value, who should we be with and who we shouldn't be with, who we are. But the amazing thing is different children in different places are often taught very, very different and even opposing or opposite conceptions. And then we grow up a little, and we're very heavily influenced by peer pressure. According to the people that we live with, or that we play with, or the peers that we decide to have fun with, so much of our life is molded. We choose certain types of entertainment. It may be sports. It may be parties. It may be going to libraries and studies. It may be smoking cigarettes or having boyfriends or girlfriends. It may be going to college. It may be becoming a sadhu or a sadvi. Yes? Nobody smokes because they just have this natural desire to smoke. It's all peer pressure. And we become conditioned. And we develop a certain sense of identity of who I am, what I like. But most of it has nothing to do really with ourselves. It has to do with the surroundings and the influences around us. And then there is social pressures. We're judged by society, by how we dress, what is our fashion, how we wear our hair. We're judged by people, what kind of car we drive, what kind of house we live in, what kind of music we listen to, what kind of social events we go to. And then the media. Through advertisements, through television, through cinema, we're so much influenced. How we should walk, how we should talk, how we should look. In America, there was a very famous movie star. This was in the 40s and 50s, 1940s and 50s. He always had a cigarette hanging from his mouth. And he just looked so cool. Everyone wanted to be like him. And others too. Soon ladies started having cigarettes in their mouth. And after some time, because of these entertainers who influenced society, tens and millions of people began to smoke cigarettes just to look like them. He was attracting so many beautiful movie actresses with his cigarette hanging from his mouth.
So then I'll also attract beautiful ladies or beautiful men if I have cigarette hanging from my mouth. Not only did they smoke, but they smoked just like the stars. The ladies were like this, and the men were like this. Very romantic. Anyways, this particular person died of lip and throat cancer. Hare Krishna. And by the time everyone realized that it wasn't the right thing, millions, tens and millions of people were uncontrollably addicted to cigarettes. One of the most difficult habits to overcome. They so deeply identified themselves with that need to smoke. Not only physically, but also socially. I've talked to people who try to give up smoking cigarettes. When they're in public, they feel sometimes very ashamed because they don't know what to do with their hands. They're always trying to be cool and romantic by like this. But now, so we develop a certain sense of identity. Yes, people dress, people walk, people talk, people perform activities under the influence of famous people through the media. What influential people do, common people follow. And then we're influenced so much by people's expectations upon us. Sometimes people just expect us to be something that's so artificial, unnatural, and almost impossible. Sometimes the expectations put so much mental, physical, and emotional pressure on us. It was said by a great speaker of the past that you can please some of the people some of the time, but you can never please all the people all of the time. In this world, because people become so influenced by superficial, artificial, shallow lifestyles, we face often the identity crisis of, do people love me because of who I am? Or do people appear to love me because of what they want me to be? How many of you have asked that question in your life? Do my friends, do my relatives, do my peers love me for who I am? Or what they want me to be. If I match their conception, then they show their love for me. Otherwise, I'm a social outcast from this scene. That's a terrible social pressure. Through all of this, we develop so many habits, so many conditionings that are very deeply rooted in the heart. And there's often great identity crisis as we're going through various transitional stages in our life. Any transition creates a certain type of identity crisis, like age. Babies are really bewildered people. They really don't know what's going on. And then they enter into childhood. And that's another type of bewilderment. But then, the real bewilderment is they enter into adolescence. It's a change. We used to be nice little girls that everyone would just embrace and touch our heads. And now all of a sudden people are going, Mataji, you know. That's a crisis. People are dealing with this in a different way because our body has grown to a different stage. And therefore, amongst adolescents, there's so much suicide, high, booming rate of suicide amongst adolescents, teenagers. because they're going through a transitional stage of life where there's so much environmental, social, family pressures, inner expectations, expectations of others. Their body is changing, their way of looking at the world is changing, their desires are changing, their values are changing, just by the influence of time. And it can be very, very confusing. It could be a great crisis. And then through all this, many people face the crisis of the traditions of the previous generations that have given so much conditionings and has put so much expectations on us with the changes in modern life and modern society. In many people's life, tradition and modern lifestyle is practically as competitive as India and Pakistan in their cricket match today. Have any of you had this experience? It is called generation gap. Have any of you heard of generation gap? I remember Shyamasundar Prabhu and myself, we grew up in the 1960s. He even in the 1950s. At that time, there was a saying. It was almost like a battle cry. It was like the anthem of the young generation. Never trust anyone over 30. Because anyone over 30, they just... See? It's confirmed. Because people over 30, they just don't understand. They just don't get it. They're just archaic, you know, put their ideas in the Smithsonian Institute or the Museum of Natural History. But they don't understand what is modern, where the world is going, who I am, and who we should be. But now those same people are in their 50s. Those who said never trust anyone over 30 are now in their 50s. And when we look back, we see that practically everything our parents told us, they were right. We were wrong. It is said that youth is wasted on the young. When you have the most dynamic energy, when the most creative intelligence, when the most abilities to get tremendous things done in the world, we lack realization. Now, sometimes, of course, there are vain traditions that just don't make any sense to us. They're not scientific, they're not philosophical, they're ritualistic, they're superstitious. And I'm being educated in a Western educational model. Well, I'm taught to doubt. I'm taught to question. That creates conflict. Sometimes we are faced by all these various influences, and they all create an image of who we are, what we want in life. Our values are molded by the various influences and experiences that we go through in life. We have explained just a few of them. Thus, in this world, the environmental influence so often creates an inner loneliness. Life becomes very shallow, superficial, empty. In my own life, Sita Devi explained a little. I was brought up in the United States of America in a moderately wealthy family where we had anything, anytime, And I was young, and I was popular, and I had such a future ahead of me, and I was associating with people who had so much success in their lives. But I began to question, am I just losing myself trying to be like all these other people? Who am I? What do I really want? It was an identity crisis. I saw that people with money and fame and health and youth and incredible physical beauty with tremendous intelligence, they weren't happy people. Their lives were not really meaningful. The meaning of their life was just chasing after money or getting some reputation or having some comforts for the body or sharing those situations with their families. Is that all there is to family life? It was hard to even find real love between people. So I began to question. And in my own life, I decided to separate myself from everything that I was brought up to conceive that I was. And I traveled to other countries, in other cultures, and I purposely didn't bring any money at all, hardly, so that I could actually be with the people. I wouldn't just be in the bubble of a tourist. Because really, tourists generally, they're in a place, but they're not in a place. Unless they're really with the people, really depending on the people. So we traveled through Europe, and I remember an experience. I was hitchhiking from London, and eventually I decided I was going to go to India, just on a spiritual quest. I was in a very poverty-stricken city, practically more than anything I've seen in India. The name of the city was Herat in Afghanistan. One day I was walking down the road, and I was just charmed to see the way people were living, so incredibly simple. Now please understand, I was a teenager from the United States of America, where everybody has telephones in every room, televisions in every room of the house. Everybody over 16 has their own car to drive. No shortage of anything. And I sat down on the side of the road in the dirt. There was no cars, no trucks. The only transportation was some caravans of camels. The people dressed in very, very simple, raggedy Middle Eastern clothes with big turbans wrapped around their heads. The ladies had, you couldn't see any part of their body. They had black sheets over them. There was no toilets, just mud huts, no electricity. I was sitting there, and something just struck me all of a sudden. I could not fathom, really, where I was or who I was, because there was absolutely nothing in the entire environment that I could relate to from my past. There was nothing. I was actually really in an emergency trauma. I was just searching, looking anywhere. The smells, the tastes, the sounds, the sights. I couldn't relate. I couldn't connect to anything that reminded me of my past, who I considered I was. My head was reeling. This is honest. I couldn't grasp anything. I really didn't. It was an identity crisis. Who am I? In that state, I prayed to God, save me. I'm not going to actually live through this unless something happens. It was that traumatic. I realized how the people of this world, including myself, our whole image of ourselves, of who we are, what we want, is just molded and created by the influences of our environment. And when we're in an environment where none of that exists, we have no identity. And then I got a wonderful inspiration that I actually have to look inside my own heart to see who I am. And all the while, it is that person within my heart who I have always been and who I will always be. But I never really seriously looked. I was always looking outside for who I am and reconfirmations of my values and my own existence. It was a wonderful, enlightening experience. I realized that my whole life I was just being carried by the current of the stream of the environment around me. And I realized so much of that was hypocritical, duplicitous, and empty. And I craved and I longed for understanding who I am. So I continued my journey to Himalayas. And there I decided I'm just not going to be with anyone. And I lived in seclusion, in solitude. That was very nice. It's actually very easy to do that. It's not so easy being with people. I was more comfortable with animals than people because they were just being themselves. They were not putting on any shows. There was no superficial actions. You see, human beings are actually social animals. We need relationships. I realize that. And what we relate to and who we relate to so much affects every aspect of our life. When you look into the mirror, do you ever wonder what you see? I will repeat that question. Please contemplate. When you look into the mirror, do you ever wonder what you see? That reflection you call me. I am a girl. I am Indian, or American, or Russian, or African. I am young, or middle-aged, or I'm old. My skin is dark, or light. I am very beautiful and I'm very satisfied. Or I'm not very beautiful, but I wish I was. And if I am very beautiful, how long will it last? I have to somehow or other sustain it. And when we look in the mirror, we think, this is what other people see. Am I satisfied with that? How could I make myself look better? Who am I? Am I short or am I tall? Is my hair blonde or black or gray? Actually, if we make a little introspective study of it, we find that we really are not these bodies. We say, my hand, my eyes, my brain, my heart, my fingers, my body. Does anyone say I hand, or I eyes, I ears, I nose, I mouth, I body? No. Mine means you're not that, but you're in temporary possession of that. So if we're not the body, which is obvious, the body's always changing. Gita says, dehinosmin yata dehi komaram yovanam chara. The body is changing from childhood to youth to old age. But we, the conscious force within the body, is simply witnessing all these changes. Who am I? I am the mind. But is that true? The mind is always changing. The mind can change in a speed faster than the wind, faster than light itself. When you're a little child, your desire in life is just the milk of your mother. That's your mind. Now, how many of you think about the milk of your mother? Your whole mind is in a very different thought process. And when you get older, it will change again. And in fact, one minute you're happy, one minute you're miserable. One minute you love somebody, one minute you hate somebody. One minute you're depressed, one minute you're rejoicing. That's the nature of mind. So we're not the mind. Who are we? There was a famous book about a young man whose father died. And he was told that your father left for you a vast treasure of wealth. But he was not told where his father left the vast treasure. So the whole book is about his traveling. He traveled through so many different places, different countries, anywhere his father had ever been, trying to find that treasure, because he understood, if I have that treasure, I will have happiness and security and life. Years and years and years he searched, and in his old age, without finding the treasure, he died. What do you think they found in his own backyard? The treasure of his wealth. This is the story of life for almost everyone in the world. The treasure that we're really looking for in our real identity is within ourselves. But the whole life, through all the various stages, we're searching for ourselves, searching for meaning, searching for pleasure, searching for love, searching for relationships of love outside of ourselves. We're looking for it in wealth. We're looking for it in various relationships. And the propaganda of the world, trying to get us to buy this and be like this and support this, is trying to convince us at all stages that you will find meaning, you will find happiness if you use this toothpaste, if you drive this car, if you wear this type of sari, if you wear this type of cosmetics on your eyes, if you go to this university, if you come to see this cinema, if you watch the cricket match. Everybody is trying to tell us how we're going to find meaning and satisfaction and fulfillment and life, and it's all dragging our consciousness outside of ourselves through our mind, through our senses, and we become so conditioned by that, we have lost ability to even look within. Who am I? What is the use of knowing so many subjects and being famous as a great scholar if you do not even know who the knower is? Srila Prabhupada, our beloved Gurudev, wrote a book. It was actually an essay included in a book. It was called, Who is Crazy? In it, he said that materialistic people think that spiritual people are crazy because they're giving up so many joys and pleasures of life that are normal. What? You're not watching television? What kind of fanaticism is this? What? You're not going to cinema? You're not going to dances? You've given up all of this pleasures of life? You're crazy. In the West, it's especially like that. But now I see it's even happening in India, especially amongst the youth. But at the same time, people who are tasting some spiritual satisfaction, they consider that materialistic people are crazy. They're giving up such inner fulfillment, inner joy, inner meaning for all these superficial, empty experiences. Just to look cool, to be popular, and to enjoy. But Bhagavad Gita explains what is reality and what is craziness. If you go to a mental hospital, you'll find that the typical type of craziness is somebody is thinking that they are somebody that they are not. Somebody is thinking, I am Queen Elizabeth. Or I am Napoleon. But actually they're not. So they're declared clinically as being crazy. So if we are thinking we are this body, and we are thinking we are all the conceptions and identities of this body, that is a type of craziness in reality, in truth. The fact is, the vast majority of the population of the world is living a lie. I am woman, I am man, I am Indian, I am American. No, these are all temporary designations. When you're in a Mercedes, you don't say, I'm a Mercedes. When you're in an ambassador, you don't say, I'm an ambassador. If you're in a Toyota, you don't say, I am a Toyota. You say, I'm in this car. But actually, I am the person who is driving, the person who is the passenger. But people have forgotten who they are. There is a nice little story. You saw the story of the chicken and eagle, yes? There was a lady who had a bird cage, and she had a very nice little bird in the cage, because the purpose of a cage is to make the bird happy, yes? So a neighbor came into her house and happened to see such a beautiful cage. It was decorated with ornaments. It was very, very perfectly clean, polished. And the lady asked her neighbor, "Do you like how beautiful the cage is?" And the lady was aghast. Her friend said, "The bird inside the cage is dead due to neglect and starvation. What is the use of such a nice cage if you forget the needs of the bird?" It's a simple story, but it's the story of the world. We are so busy taking care of our external, temporary, superficial, bodily and mental identities, which is necessary. If you have a car, you should keep the car running nicely. But you should also make sure that the health of the driver is good. We're decorating these cages, but we're completely ignorant of the needs of ourself. Now, this is an identity crisis. A fortunate person realizes that they are experiencing an identity crisis on a spiritual platform. A very superficial, shallow life is one who never even questions who I am. There's no identity crisis. Yes, I'll just live and give everything to the temporary superficialities of this world and my misconception of who I am and never understand the treasure of the wealth and love within me. According to Vedanta Sutra, Atato Brahma Jigyasa, the actual beginning of human life is when we have this identity crisis. And we sincerely inquire, who am I? What is the meaning of life? Why is there suffering? Who is God? What is my relationship with God? And to sincerely pursue these things. Yes, living in the 21st century in a city like Bombay, all of you wonderful, intelligent young ladies will be bombarded on all sides with various influences and temptations that drag your consciousness outside of yourself. But how rare, how special, and how intelligent is that person who really wants to have a deep, fulfilling meaning to their life. But to do that, you may have to cross over certain barriers where people will ridicule you, people will joke about you, people will criticize you, people will not understand you. That is the way the world is. But do we want to sell our eternal soul for the cheap popularity of this world, which never lasts anyway? That is actually the most important question in our lives. Bhagavad Gita explains, Najayate mriyate vakata chinnayam bhutvabhavata vanabhuya. The nature of the conscious force, the self within us, is it has no birth, it has no death, it is primeval, it is everlasting, it is not slain when the body is slain. That is our self. Bhagavad Gita explains, Nashato vidyate bhavo na bhavo vidyate shata. That those who are actually seers of truth, they understand that what is temporary is unreal. And what has no cessation, what is eternal, is real. You and me, we are all eternal. Yes, there are many social issues that must be addressed. But all of the problems of prejudice, all of the problems of people being mistreated, not giving proper rights, is based on this disease of ignorance. Men exploit women because they're thinking, I am man and you are woman. Not understanding the horrible karmic consequences of hurting another person or trespassing on another person's rights. In the 1960s in America, Civil rights march for freedom of the black people. Because in those days, especially in the South, where I was living for some time, if you were a black person, that means African, large population of black people, Afro-Americans, you have to sit in the back of the bus. 90% of jobs, you're not allowed, simply because of the color of your skin. You're not allowed to use the same drinking fountains. You're not allowed to use the same bathrooms. You're not allowed to live in the same neighborhoods. They were pushed into ghettos and they couldn't get out simply because of the color of their skin. And many of the black people who revolted against this were killed. And ladies, this is Ladies Week this week, I believe. Yes. Because men have more physical strength, There has been so much exploitation and various social activists are trying to change that and give ladies and other such suppressed people and depressed people the right to live, the right to live with freedom. However, it is superficial if we don't understand and address the root cause of the problem. The oppressors and the oppressed are oftentimes victims of ignorance. The Bhagavad Gita teaches, Vidyavanaya sampane brahmani gavihastini suni chaiva svapakecha pandita samadarshana. Who is a learned person? A person who sees. A Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. A man, a woman. A person who sees a human being, a cow, an elephant, a dog, or a dog eater with equal vision. That is, according to Gita, a pundit, a learned person. A pundit is not simply one who can recite many, many slokas. That is not Gita's explanation of pundit. It is not someone who can defeat other people in logic and argument. A pundit is not a person who can give lectures and educate in scripture or academic knowledge many, many people and even bring them to PhD levels. No, that is not pundit. Gita says a pundit is one who sees every living entity with equal vision, does not discriminate, sees a Brahmin, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and all classes of human beings with equal vision. How? Because we see not just the outer dress. We see the soul, the beautiful soul, within everyone. Mamayavamso jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said by Lord Krishna that all living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. If you love God, within our temple, we worship God with the holy name of Krishna, although the Lord has many names. In various religions, he has revealed various forms and names, but he is the one Supreme Lord. Krishna means all attractive. If you love Krishna, then spontaneously, naturally, you will love every living being. Even the insignificant ant, even the serpent. You may not pick up the serpent and kiss it, because there must be discretion, but you will love the soul within the heart of that creature, because you will see that that creature is your brother, your sister. It's part of your family. It's part of God. The nature of the soul is Satchit Ananda. Everyone wants eternality. Everyone wants proper awareness. And everyone ultimately wants happiness. Please raise your hand if you want to be happy. Please raise your hand if you want to suffer. Now, many of you are from different castes, different communities, different ages, different nationalities. Why is it you all have the same thing in common? You all want to be happy and you don't want to suffer. It's not that just Indians are like that, or just Americans are like that, or just rich people are like that, or just poor people are like that, or just ladies are like that, because even the men raise their hand. My dear friends, this evening we are minorities, so. because it is the nature of the conscious force of life within us. We are Satchitananda. We exist to experience ecstasy. That is factually the only meaning of life. The soul exists to taste ecstasy. Ananda. Anandamayo bhyashat. Every living being is looking for ecstasy. Not just a little pleasure, not even peace. We are not Satchit Shanti. We are Satchit Ananda. Just some peace is nice. That peace means, you know, all of the anxieties and pressures, we forget them and we feel some inner satisfaction and peace. That's nice. But it doesn't satisfy the soul. The soul is looking for ecstasy. But unfortunately, in the world today, because we do not understand who we are or where ecstasy is, we're looking, we're searching, we're groping, we're working so very, very hard in the hard struggle of existence, trying to find happiness through the mind and the senses. What is the ultimate pleasure? The ultimate pleasure is not just seeing something, or rubbing something against your body, or rubbing something against your tongue, or inhaling some fumes with your nose. The pleasure everyone is looking for is love. If you have everything, but you do not have love, will you be happy? If you have billions of crores of rupees, if you have great fame, youthful body, but no love, you don't have anyone that you really love, and there's not people who really love you, will you be happy? Superficial, empty life. Why? Every living entity has that propensity. Now, there are such a vast mixture of different types of people in this room today. How many of you agree that what you're really looking for in life is love? Please raise your hand. How many in this room, men, women, children of various categories, socially, racially, sexually, everything, all of you people, how many of you believe honestly that you can be happy without love? Actually, even the ants, even the cockroaches won't raise their hand. Because they're all looking for pleasure. They're all looking for love. That is the eternal need of the soul. And anyone who is not experiencing Ananda is actually suffering a very severe identity crisis from the absolute platform of reality. So how many of you today say Hari Bol very loudly if you are experiencing an identity crisis? I'll ask the question again. The answer, if it is affirmative, say Hari Bol. How many of you are experiencing in life identity crisis? Yes. Even me. Being sannyasi in this environment, somebody warned me that I might experience identity crisis. But actually, I'm very happy because you are all Krishna's children. We're all a family. There's love and peace when we understand the harmonious connection we eternally have with each other. But when we forget that, there's so many divisions. There's so many reasons to fight. There's so many reasons to compete. When I was young, I lived in America, and the enemy was Russia. In the 1960s, we were always afraid at any minute the Russians were going to bomb us. And we were trained to hate Russians. Huh? From our childhood, communism and Russia, they're
demons, they're enemies, they're bad people, they're like animals, and they'll come and eat us.
Yes? We used to have drills, bomb drills in our schools, where there'd be this, they would pull the alarm and it would go, and all the children had to hide under their desks. Because the idea is the Russians are bombing us. I don't know how much the desk is going to protect you, but some sort of ritual. We feared them. We hated them. And now, every year I go to Moscow, and I see that the Russian people are so beautiful, so wonderful, so loving, so spiritually minded, so kind. They're people. In fact, sometimes I think maybe the Russians should have won that Cold War. But due to ignorance, due to our environment, we learn to hate people without even knowing really who they are or what they're about. But actually, we all have something in common. We're all part of God. We all need to love. And when we see the spark of God within each other and we harmonize on that principle, then there is peace. Then there is love. Then there can be actual progress in human civilization. Progress in human civilization is not in material things. Real progress is not in the national economy. Real progress is not determined by the results in the World Bank. It's not determined by computer technology or how many military bombs we have in our arsenal. Real progress is in how people treat each other. That is progress. The nature of the soul, Jivera Swarupoi Krishnera Nityadas, we're eternal servants of God or Krishna. In fact, the nature of love is to serve. The nature of love is to unconditionally serve. The nature of love is not to take, but to give. When we become selfishly oriented by our misconceived false ego, we become very selfish. We're always thinking about me and I. In fact, certain sociologists have called the generation of the world today the I generation. Have you heard this? Everyone is thinking in terms of I. That's why 70% of marriages in America are divorced within 3 years. Because there's not a conception of service to the other, an adjustment to the other. It's the conception of I. What makes me happy? 98% of all children in juvenile delinquent correctional centers, that means juvenile jails, 98% of children who have performed crimes came from divorced parents. They're troubled. They're torn between two people. They don't understand it. It's inconceivable to them. It creates traumatic, difficult pain within their heart, which is very difficult to ever overcome. Why do they divorce? I don't like you. No, I don't like you. You're not giving me what I want. And look at in the corporate world. You have all heard of the Enron scandal. Big multi-millionaires, people worth tens or hundreds of millions of dollars, exploiting their own employees who made them rich so that I become richer. This is a totally artificial, superficial, unnatural conception to the soul. The nature of the soul is unconditional service, unconditional love. If you take a fish out of water and put him on the sand, no matter how much wealth, prestige, fame, or various physical enjoyments you give that fish, he'll never really be happy because it's in an unnatural state. The fish is suffering an identity crisis laying in the sand. But sometimes the fish are so mesmerized by expectations, anticipations, and striving for various pleasures on that sand, he doesn't even look anywhere else. We have to look to the ocean, our natural home. We have to look within. Apuryamanam achalapratishtam. Bhagavad Gita says, for one who finds their happiness within, who is illumined within, who rejoices within, that person is of real intelligence. The quantity of pleasure within your own heart that you don't have to go anywhere to find is like a vast shoreless ocean with no bottom. And we're looking for the little drops and puddles of this world to satisfy us. It is so important. Actually, the more we try to take, the more we become frustrated. It is in understanding others that we find fulfillment, not in being understood. It is in giving to others that we find fulfillment, not in taking. It is in giving love to others that we realize love, not in trying to be loved. Because as you give, you receive on the spiritual platform. As you take, you lose. That is the reality. And it can be experienced even today in our own lives. But why? Why we have so much selfishness, so much ego? Why we're so much concerned for ourselves, we're not concerned with service and expressing love to others? Because since time immemorial, in this life, throughout, and in previous lives, we have just accumulated so much egoistic conditionings. And there is a serious identity crisis, whether we know it or not. Lord Chaitanya prayed, Cheto darpana marajanam vava mahadavagni nirvapanam. Spirituality, Sanatan Dharma, is the process simply of cleaning our heart of misconceptions, of unwanted attachments and egos, and bringing our heart to its natural, pure, eternal state. Just like a mirror. If a mirror is covered with dust and dirt that has been accumulated for many, many years, we can't really see who we are through the mirror. All we see is the dirt. Our mind is covered with so many layers of conditioned influences, which has made such a deep ego that when we look into the mirror of our own mind, we see, I'm a man or I'm a woman. I'm an Indian or I'm a Pakistani. Or please understand, if India wins the cricket match, the Indians will be ecstatic. But the Pakistanis will be very, very sad. And if Pakistan wins, they will be rejoicing, and the Indians. So depending on who you identify with, that will determine whether you're happy or sad. But really, is it a happy moment or not? It's just relative to who you identify with, what body you identify with. Does that make sense? Just like in America, they have different teams. And they're all based on cities. So I remember living in Chicago as a little boy. Oh, how I wanted the Chicago team to win. But then when I moved to another city, I wanted the other team to win Chicago. So it's the happiness is not depending on really who wins. It depends who you identify with. So who am I? The holy name of God, which is a transcendental, pure spiritual vibration, cleanses the mirror of the heart. And when the mirror of the heart becomes completely clean, then we can actually see who we are. We could see the love within ourselves and unconditionally manifest that love in every aspect of our life. This doesn't mean that we have to renounce the responsibilities and occupations of the world. What it means is expressing that inner knowledge and love through whatever we do. Whether we're doctors or nurses or engineers or politicians or housewives or students, whatever our particular occupational duty is, the real essence is that we are expressing our love of God and our love for all living beings through our skills. One social truth that is relevant in every society throughout the world is mothers who take very deep, loving, sincere responsibility for their children. That is a God-given service. But in the Western world, I know, and it's becoming like this in India, being a mother is considered something very ordinary, mundane, and not important. Better to go out and preach, or better to go out and make lots of money and have a career. We're not against careers. We're not against preaching, certainly, if that is your propensity. But don't neglect the responsibility God has given you, because He has entrusted a child under your care. The whole future of the world is very much dependent on the spiritual compassionate nature of the mothers of the world. There is no greater responsibility. So when we chant the holy name of the Lord, which is an all pure spiritual vibration, it cleanses all misconceptions, and we can actually see our true spiritual identity and express that identity through everything we do. Thus, this chanting of Hare Krishna, or chanting of any of the great names of God, is not simply a sectarian ritualistic idea. It is an ancient, time-proven scientific method of purifying the heart and awakening our inner deep realization of our true self, our true nature, and to live within this world in such a way that we can do wonderful, wonderful service to all living beings. Our beloved Guru Maharaj Srila Prabhupada touched our hearts so deeply. Would you like to know the reason why? It wasn't only because he had a philosophy that can answer all of our questions. It wasn't simply because everything he spoke, he practiced so perfectly without hypocrisy. But what really deeply moved our hearts is he loved every one of us unconditionally. He wasn't concerned with what nationality, what income bracket. He wasn't concerned with whether we were learned or illiterate, whether we were rich or whether we were poor, whether we were skilled or unskilled, whether we were little children or old men or women. He didn't care if we were men or women. He loved us unconditionally. And we can feel that. And he was willing to give his life and his everything for all of us. He loved unconditionally and was willing to give his life to serve people that he never ever met before. Now, a mother and father naturally wants to serve their children. Srila Prabhupada came to a foreign land and met people who had completely different culture, completely different habits, people who were totally morally, ethically, and spiritually degraded. And he loved us even more than a mother and father loves their own child. That's unconditional. That transformed our hearts. That enthused us that we want to be like this. We want to serve this mission, mission of unconditional love, which is awakened through proper association, proper culture, and the cleansing of the heart through the chanting of the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Is there any questions that anyone would like to ask?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I guess I've been hearing so many wonderful things from you over the last few years, and still, somehow or another, I believe that there's some way that we can enjoy, and I wonder why this is.
Because there is a way you can enjoy.
But I'm thinking in the material world.
But you can enjoy in the material world too. But real enjoyment in this material world is in harmonizing our actions, our words, and our lives with the true desires of the heart and the soul. Param drisva nivartate. It's very difficult to give up enjoyment. But if we just direct that propensity to enjoy in a proper direction, we will experience a taste of enjoyment that is far superior to the temporary karmic pleasures of this world. Just like, do you like to dance? Yes. So dance for Krishna. Is that not better than dancing with some man in the disco club? It's a lot less karmic and implicating and complicated. And it actually awakens joy from the soul rather than just the mind. You like to sing? Sing Krishna's names. Sing the beautiful prayers and bhajans of pure souls. It gives inner peace, inner happiness, and inner meaning. Do you like to eat? How many of you like to eat? That is also a universally popular activity. So instead of eating all kinds of things that just cause suffering and death to others, that karmically bind us and cause suffering in the future, we can eat prasad. I think all of you are waiting for this experience. And prasad tastes nice, does it not? Krishna is so kind. Gulab jamuns, rasgulas, halwa, sabji, puris, khichdi. Krishna is so merciful, he'll even eat pizza. Just so you can have the prasad that you like. Yes? So in this world, we like to talk to people instead of gossip. We can praise others. We could glorify God, glorify the saints, glorify people around us who are doing good work. So yes, in this world, we can't give up the desire to enjoy, but we can direct this propensities in ways that purify our heart and give our heart real enjoyment. Now, sometimes to direct it in that direction is difficult for us because we're so conditioned for so long to enjoy in a very selfish, karmic way. Yes? Therefore, tapo divyam putra kayena sattvam. Human life is actually meant for tapasya. And really, tapasya is not a horrible, painful thing. Tapasya simply means doing the right thing. Doing what's good for you and good for all others, and somehow or other, not doing those, replacing the bad things with good things. Eliminating the bad things with good things. That is what bhakti means. And if we are sincere and we have nice association with people who help us in this way, then we will discover that great treasure of love within our hearts. Does that answer your question? This is Amanda. She is from California in America. Is there any other questions?
Hare Krishna Prabhuji.
What is your name?
Chitra. I am a little confused because you said we are suffering because we mold to our surroundings or people around us. But then I'm confused as to what unconditional love is, because somewhere you're giving in, I feel that you're giving in to what people want by giving in unconditional love.
Actually, when the surroundings around us cause us to forget our true eternal spiritual identity, our relationship with God and our love for God, and increase and perpetuate these superficial ideas, then that is real identity crisis from a spiritual point of view. But when our environment helps us to actually harmonize our heart with the will of God, harmonize our mind with the will of the soul, harmonize our body, our mind, and our words with our true desires to love and to be loved, then that environment is very healthy. And unconditional love is a very high and pure state, but it is our nature. And the greatest quest of life is to cultivate, to nourish, and to realize that love within us. That realization is accessible to every one of us, whoever we may be, in this very life. There is no question of who is qualified or who is unqualified. You don't have to be a Brahmin. You don't have to be a pundit. You don't have to be a man. All you have to do is be sincere and take proper guidance and have proper association. And then even in the surroundings around us, we could be instruments of God's unconditional love to everyone. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Hare Krishna Swamiji. I just want to ask, is the advancement of knowledge in the material world, is the identity crisis in the spiritual world?
Is there identity crisis in the spiritual world?
No. Is the advancement of knowledge, is the advancement of knowledge in the material world, is termed as the identity crisis in the spiritual world?
Is the advancement of knowledge in the material world, and I create a identity crisis on
the spiritual platform? World, yeah.
Not necessarily. It shouldn't be like that, because advancement of knowledge in this material world is actually a very good thing. Mm-hmm. If it is harmonized with knowledge of who we are, who is God, and what is our relationship, then that knowledge will be used in wonderful ways.
Yes.
Just like, for instance, knowledge of engineering, knowledge of mathematics, knowledge of cooking, knowledge of music. These things can all be used wonderfully in the service of God. Then that knowledge has great value. Srila Prabhupada explains that material knowledge are like so many zeros. Now, what happens if you have 100,000 zeros? What does that add up to? Add, multiply, in any formation you want,
all of those zeros, and what will you get? Zero.
Zero.
Because at the time of death, everything's gone. Whatever you've accumulated. But what if you put a one in front of those zeros? 10, 100, 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, million, 10 million, 100 million, billion, trillion, quadrillion. So if we simply put the one of Krishna consciousness, devotion or love for Krishna in our life, then all the material education we have only increases what we can do for Krishna. But as far as Krishna is concerned, he doesn't see how many zeros you have. He sees your sincerity of purpose. Whether you're a powerful preacher who knows the scriptures, or whether you're a wealthy businessman who gives crores of rupees to the cause of bhakti, or whether you're a simple sweeper of the street, or a common housewife, if we're using whatever we know and who we are in the loving service of the Lord, that will lead to the ultimate perfection of life.
Thank you so much.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, so much. Thank you.
So yes, if you are students, be the best students you can be. But harmonize your studies with the most fulfilling, satisfying purpose of devotion to Krishna. Shamsundar Prabhu, would you like to speak something? Huh? Before, if you can speak something. Please, please. Everyone who would like Shamsundar Prabhu to speak something, say Hari Bol. Even if you just say goodbye to everyone, everyone will be happy. Would you like to give little message to all of these virtuous ladies? Can we give him microphone, please? Shamsundar Prabhu is one of the original disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. He and his good wife Malati Devi, they opened centers in San Francisco, in London. He personally made George Harrison of the Beatles a devotee of Krishna. He was his best friend. He was one of the original devotees to establish Krishna conscious movement in India. And he's just such a open-hearted, wonderful friend and devotee. Tonight he's leaving on an airplane to Armenia to do some seva. Do you know where is Armenia? Neither do I.
My mind has already left, so it's hard to bring it back. But I'll be back in a week. 1 week, I'm coming back. Whatever you said tonight covered everything there is to say. I don't know what to say, Maharaj.
Would you like to speak just a few words about the conclusion of my talk, Srila Prabhupada's unconditional love and how it moved your heart?
I'm going to get you for this.
Thank you very much.
Well, unconditional means without reservation or any attachments. It's simply the unilateral desire to give. No one has ever experienced this in their life, except perhaps with mother, perhaps with father, or in the family. No one has this experience, but it's there in all of us. We all want it. When you unilaterally love someone, you feel totally secure. All happiness is there. It's the most pleasurable experience there is, because you don't have to... there's nothing to fight. There's no anxiety. It's an anxiety-free state. So unconditional love is what we're all craving. I've only tasted it in very small amounts, just enough with Srila Prabhupada to know that it is possible. And it's the very great goal of my life to try to achieve it. I only feel like I come close to it when I'm in the association of devotees. And when there's something that I'm doing that has direct relationship to serving my spiritual master.
Thank you very, very much. Haribo. I thank you very much.